I'm talking to Drew Donovan this morning, and we're in Cafe Central in the centre of Soya. And this is our recording studio with the birds singing and with lots of people chattering. But my pleasure is to talk to Drew. So welcome, Drew. Welcome to Boat Radio. And thank you for coming to tell us your story.
Shirley, thanks for having me. It's always lovely, and I'm humbled that you think I'm interesting enough to have me sit down and ask some questions of.
No, ask some questions. I want to know your story. I'm incredibly nosy. You know I'm very nosy, and I need to know all the details. So don't leave anything out, because I would like to know why you, the boy from Nebraska, where you can't get much further, what on earth are you doing here in Soya?
Well, I guess most stories have something to do with a woman or a man, I guess, depending on your gender or interests. I met my wife, she's Swedish, at an acting school in New York in 1995, and we studied together and spent all together almost 10 years before we moved here to Soya, actually, in 12 years ago. Her mother owns a farm in Puerto Soya, so we left the city, we had our first son. We stayed there for a year, and then we would have had to move, and probably more westerly in America. And there were opportunities and possibilities here. I knew there was production work on the island. Palma Pictures was about the only thing around at the time, and I began to work with them in the art department and standby props on set and things like that. So I started quite quickly in that regard. And then there were other opportunities here with the yoga that my wife, the journey that she had just begun. Of developing things to do here, so we chose to do that. I love the mountains and I love the sea, and the climate is fantastic. So it was, I pushed more to come here than she did. So.
Were you from an acting family?
Not at all. I guess I'm the black sheep of the family. The rest are lawyers and business people. My father was artistic. He was a dentist, and he always said that if anyone in the family was to get into dentistry, it would have been me, because there's so much actually aesthetics and art that's associated with the profession that a lot of people don't realize. Just hairy fingers going in a mouth, pulling out teeth, it's not what it's all about. But I guess from that side of it, artistically, that was about it. But I had interests in art, and I wanted to be a designer, commercial artist and things like that, and architecture in high school and mechanical drafting and things like that. But acting in theater was always a part of it. I was always putting on shows and doing that sort of thing, and the stand-up comedy kind of thing for my, fourth grade class, or, class clown kind of things. And never thought much about a career in it or finding the passions that I have for it now. But then as things grew and developed in high school, and of course I was in class plays and things, and then, decided that I wanted to do that, combine the both art and theater in college.
I had a conversation with your mother when she visited, and she was just telling me about the productions that they all came to watch you in at school, and just how much you made them laugh and how much they were proud of you, because you were different to the other kids in your family. The others didn't really have an acting bent at all, did they?
Well, it's sweet. I mean, they were always supportive of all of us. Whatever we did, from athletics to what we wanted to do in life. Of course, having a conversation with your father or your mother and saying, I'm going to be an artist, isn't always that easy to get a positive response back. Although they were, but they were like, okay, well, what's your plan B? And there's validity to that, and I'll have those conversations with my children one day, I'm sure, to make sure that they're okay and supported, and they get what they need in life and are happy. So I did get educational endorsements in both art, theater, education, art and theater. so that I could teach. And there was a desire in me to do that at some point, although I never went and taught in high school or anything like that. But now I direct at the Swedish school where my kids go. I direct the musical there at the end of the year, and I have private classes that I teach. And I do enjoy it. I do enjoy giving back and, as they say, sending the elevator back down to people. And, you know, you don't touch everybody, but you do a few, and that makes the difference. And what I get back from the Swedish school is just fantastic. Seeing them grow and seeing them take risks and find the courage and, you know, stand up and speak out and express themselves. You know, whether they end up going into acting as a career or anything like that is really not the point of the importance of theater arts in education. It's such a great tool to build great human beings.
So, Drew, you have been a huge influence on the theater in Mallorca. And your name is synonymous with all sorts of things. But tell us really where it all began, because your memorable performances as Scrooge in Christmas Carol will never be forgotten by anyone that saw that. Nor your littlest son, who, poor little tiny Tim, tiny has Tim. He actually grown since then?
He has grown a little bit. He's working on it. Fortunately for us in the show, he's going to play it one more year. I thought maybe the last time we did it 2 years ago was the last time, but he'll do it one more time, and yeah, we'll do it again this December.
So you've stopped feeding him so he won't grow
exactly,
anymore?
Exactly, and put him in a box, it works pretty well for the casting,
casting requirements.
You've heard it here first, then, that Christmas Carol is returning to Palma this year.
Yeah, no, I'm excited again. I was. We didn't do it last year for different reasons, and it's such a great piece, and because of my, you know, doing Scrooge, the role, and the scenic design elements of it, and just putting it up with the amount of people and the amount of effort. I'm really in love with it, and we did it 2 years in a row, and we took last year off, and fortunately now we're going to be able to bring it back this year, and we'll do it at the auditorium downstairs at the Sala Mozart, and the dates are the first two weekends in December. I don't have the specific dates in my head, but and we're still talking with the management, but no, happy about that, really, really excited.
Can you just explain to the listener what your Christmas Carol consists of? Because it isn't just straight play, is it? We have a lot of music and a lot of humour and a lot of costumes, so tell us all about it.
It's a traditional telling of the Dickens classic, and it's infused with traditional Christmas carols that are woven within the play. So we have about 15 people in the cast, and looking to grow the cast as far as the younger actors are concerned, in order to give some more of the younger kids an opportunity to be a part of something professional here on the island. It's an international cast, it's an international sound, it's not the traditional English corner sound that you'll hear in most tellings of the story, but people from France, from Denmark, Germany, are all incorporated in Sweden, America, so it's truly an international sound when you hear the show.
And then the theatre production company that you're also involved with, the Isla Group, I mean, what's happening to that these days?
Well, Isla was founded 4 years ago, I think, five or so, with like-minded people. Three women actually were the founding members of it, and two of which are from Sawyer, or the Sawyer Valley, that we're very good friends with. We had met a long time ago and came from different interests, educationally and professionally. And we formed this group in order to produce international theater on the island. There's a lot of culture here, a lot of music and a lot of art. There is some theater and, of course, opera and dance and things like that, but the majority is Catalan speaking, or Catalan in language. And my desire was to build a group of people, an international theater company, to produce things here on the island to cater to the largely English-speaking population that visits. I don't know, 25 million people came here last year or this year from Sweden, Germany, England, and around the world. And my thought was, you know, there's a big market there. There's a big interest, I think, for people to come and to experience really good international theater, high production value. So that was the desire. Also to break into the educational aspects of things with Isla. We have an educational wing for educational outreach to go into the international schools, of which there are a number here, and even the local schools. So it's not about excluding them, but to offer kids more options and give them more experiences. Certainly in the international schools, there is a bit of theater, but not on the level of which I was blessed to be able to experience in my educational background. So for me, that's a big thing and an important thing to be able to have opportunities for the international population and as well as the local kids. We've gone into local schools and things like that. We are looking to have a couple matinees for this year's A Christmas Carol at San Cayetano. It has an auditorium that seats, I don't know, like 400, quite a large thing. So we'll hopefully have 2 days there, the 1st and 2nd of December, before the week later we go to the auditorium.
And as far as the work with the children is concerned, do you run a separate theatre group of your own as well?
Well, I established Palma Youth Theatre a year ago, and it's in conjunction with Isla. And I teach private classes at my wife's yoga studio, Earth Yoga, in Palma. And I have a group of older actors from 15 to 18 plus, and then from 12 to 14, or 11 to 14, that I have and that I work with. So, you know, we work on everything from the beginning of, you know, character development to different themes and working on text and things like that and building on that. So I will take some of these students that I've had over the years. Some of them have already been in A Christmas Carol, and I'll incorporate some more in. So it's a professional aspect of Palma Youth Theatre to not only have classroom work and to do that sort of thing, but also give them opportunities for professional participation in professional productions, Christmas Carol being one. I'd like to also produce some shows in the future where I can take material that's suited for these age groups of kids and do that so that they're taking the ball and running with it and using classroom experience and putting in a professional setting and working with them as a director-actor relationship. And a lot of the ways that how I approach the musical at the Swedish school, going in with a full musical, full book, full music, casting 150 kids in the school, and everybody has to kind of do or have a little bit to do. Obviously, the older kids with more language skills do more of the book and the larger roles. But I work with them, and it becomes a classroom. But we're working for that night at 8:30 at night on June 8th, where 200 people are going to be watching you, and it's a great motivator. And you don't give them a choice. You don't give them a plan B. You just force them to jump off the cliff and trust themselves and trust the director and trust the people around. And, you know, if you commit to things, you're three-quarters of the way there, and you're going to be okay. So it doesn't necessarily matter how the notes come out of your mouth, but if you're committed to it, to the character, or to the role, or to the song, or the note, you'll be fine, and everybody will be along and be rooting for you. So, and that's a good lesson to give them, and I really enjoy that aspect of the educational part of Isla.
And Shakespeare. Shakespeare is a feature of your life here. I think we hadn't done too much Shakespeare before you guys got involved.
Well, I don't have a great deal of experience. I had some classes, of course, and I played Benedict in Much Ado About Nothing in undergraduate, which was fantastic, a great experience. You know, when you go up in a play, you have to get through it and you have to come up with lines in the top of your head. But if you go up doing Shakespeare, you got to somehow make it rhyme and in meter, so it's quite a challenge. I do enjoy it and I do appreciate it, and we haven't done a lot here with the exception of an inner schools production of A Tempest, where we did an abridged version, about a 45-minute version of it, and we took together students from my private class and Palma College, and then the academy I worked with, and I went into the classroom and took some took the English kids from there, and then BIC. So we had some young kids in BIC, and we all included them in some way. The kids were the water, and we had, you know, worked with fabrics and things like that. And as the and the older kids did, and then we fused it all together. We had one technical dress rehearsal where everybody met each other, and we went through it and ran through it and blocked it. And then the next day, you know, we put it up for the parents, and I built a set for it, and we had costumes and things like that. And we did that at the auditorium in Magalo Calvia. And that was extremely successful. So we've always talked about doing a full-on production of A Tempest, perhaps setting it on a beach and have people outside and doing that. So these are all things to think about, that are certainly possibilities.
So really you're describing a hugely busy life where you are a man with a mission, really. You're taking theatre to the masses, and English theatre in particular. But back at the ranch, when you're earning your own living as well, in addition to this, tell us about your set designs that everyone's after.
Well, the scenic design was a great bridge of my two main interests, art and theatre. So I learned to paint, I learned to build, and learned to design in college. And we had a small department, so we had to do everything. So I spent my time in the theater instead of spending it in the art room. And it was always a part of me, and always was a part of my professional life. I would work at stock companies, summer companies, where I would be the designer. I would get paid more, and I would work the whole season. And I'd say, okay, I want to be in this play, this musical, this play. And I would make more than the interns, or make more, you know. So economically, it was a good thing. And I did that for a long, long time. And then went back to school in 95, moved to New York, and studied at the Neighborhood Playhouse, which was quite a renowned school. Robert Duvall, Gregory Peck in the old days, and Chris Noth, Alison Janney, those kind of people came from the hallways of the Playhouse. I went back to school to get more of a focused technique in acting that I didn't get in my undergraduate. But the scenic design and the building and the carpentry were always a part. So I was working on Broadway as a carpenter, and working in scene shops, building, you know, Billy Joel storytellers for VH1, and those types of things, Broadway shows and small off-Broadway things, and freelancing as a carpenter or a scenic designer, and working as a production manager for the Playhouse, which had a 200-seat theater inside of it. And so I was always working in the business in some way, and because of my technical talents and artistic talents in the theater, it was a great way to work in it, and it allowed me to work in it full-time, and I still do that today.
Well, in Mallorca, I think there are a number of theatre companies, Mallorquin theatre companies, that have used your services, and they're all after you as a set designer, Drew.
Yeah, I've worked with a few. Mallorca So. Well, I started in production when I came here. I can't remember if I mentioned that already. Palma Pictures, I got in the door pretty quick and began to work as a carpenter and on set as a standby props person, art direction, dressing, and things like that. And of course, did bits and pieces and odd jobs around the cabinet here or there and things like that. And then I met Raphael Burnett, who works for Mallorca So, and he was producing some original musicals of things, and we somehow connected, and I began to work with him. So I've done a number of shows for them, Beauty and the Beast, Peter Pan, and many other shows that have been produced at the Teatro Principal and the local around the island, all around the island. So I've worked with him. I'm currently working with a dance company called Pasados, who does the Nutcracker. They produce the Nutcracker every year at the Teatro Principal. And I'm designing a set now for them for The Little Prince, which will have its premiere the 29th, I think, of September in Peguera. And then they have some dates at the Teatro Principal, and they also take it to the Canaries, and they'll take it to some other locations around the island.
I'll take you just into more of a commercial aspect now. So Palmer Pictures works with many companies that are filming advertisements here. So many of our local characters we see on screen. Would you be amongst them?
I have been a little bit. As I said, I work kind of on the technical side of things, but when you're down in the shop or you're on set and you start singing opera or you start being great, goofy or crazy, you're always auditioning, I say, you know?
You never
know. You never know who's in front of the camera or behind the camera or at the table next to you. So I have had some work commercially. I did a Florette salad commercial that actually played in the UK, and a lot of people saw that. And you know, I got that. I was working as a carpenter in the shop, and my art director was up with the director, and they were looking for people to sing opera. You know, this Christmas salad, Christmas salad, Christmas salad. You know, this was the thing, and so the art director said, "Well, you should go downstairs and talk to my carpenter. He's probably singing right now," which I always was, you know, or doing some Shakespeare, you know, craziness at the top of my lungs. And so I came up and I did Lasciatemi morire, lasciatemi morire, in così grandura sporte. I just pulled this little opera ditty out of my head that I've used before, of course. And I got hired, so I ended up working the shoot instead of working the backside of things. And yeah, so those things, you know, open up opportunities and possibilities. And because I know people in production, I know when things are happening. And it was because of that I had a small role, a nice little role, about 10 days of filming in a BBC production of Four Last Songs, where I was working with Stanley Tucci and Hugh Bonneville and Rhys Ifans and all of these amazing people who came to this little island about 8 years ago and shot this film in Daya. And I was so blessed to be a part of it. So, you know, all of these years and growing up, you have, you know, what do you want to do in life? What do you want to see? What do you want to, you know? And I was like, well, I want to see my name on the front of a film. Then I'll know I've done it. And then, okay, you know, I want to be a movie star, these kinds of aspirations. And then I got a little more humble and I said, well, maybe just on the back. I can, you know, somewhere in the back, it's okay. End credits, you know, I'm fine with that. So I did achieve that, you know. It took me a while and moving halfway around the world to do that. But I was fortunate to have that opportunity and have 10 days of filming and work with these kinds of people in my backyard. And I'm still hopeful. And who knows, maybe I have my name in front sometime.
I'm sure you will. But what do you think about the developments in production and filming that's happened this last year? Because, of course, the night manager has taken country by storm. And just now, at this precise moment, it's just finished in Germany, and the reviews and the number of people in Germany have been watching it, leave aside what happened in the UK. I mean, were you part? Did you see any part?
You know,
of that
to be honest, I don't know the word. I knew it was around, and I knew it was very popular, and people come here to see the locations and stuff. But I haven't seen it. But there is a lot of that, and it's great. It, you know, it used to be people came here for commercial work only. Mm. It's a very, it's so well suited the island. You know, diverse landscape for location. It's all condensed. The climate is beautiful. They can shoot Thai market in the morning and the Bronx in the afternoon to fishing village in Norway in the evening, and they can do it all. So it's always been appealing and attractive that way. Unfortunately, for feature film and things like that, and I know they have had some things. Cloud Atlas was here a few years ago, and they've had some other things to come through. But because the local government hasn't, in my opinion, really gotten their act together as far as the film commission and whatever they need to do, I don't know what's all entailed with that. But I know that a lot of people come through and they end up skipping over Mallorca and going to Malta or someplace else that you can get the same kind of look from. You know, if it's Tom Hanks in Castaway, which could have come here, or the Guy Ritchie Madonna film Swept Away, I don't know, I think these productions did look at it, but the incentives were not here in some way. the infrastructure is here and it's close enough to get the equipment. And at, you know, they ended up bringing down trucks and everything from London for Cloud Atlas anyway. So it's not a question of that, but somehow, for some reason, they're not enticing or not giving those incentives for those films to come here. And I think they're missing out on a lot of exposure and opportunity for economic benefit and growth in that way.
And as far as the future is concerned, what have you got in the back of your head for next year?
What else is going on? Yeah, well, for Halloween, the weekend of Halloween, last year we've always done I'm an American.
May have really?
stated earlier. And a good friend of mine, who's also an American, who lives in Binnen Eich down the street from me, we have for years, I don't know, eight, nine, maybe skipped a year, put on Halloween. And we do it quite well. We don't just do a little bit. Less is not more. More is more, and more is great as far as Halloween goes. And last year we opened it to the public. We got permissions and insurances and things like that, and had quite a bit. We did it for two evenings, and we did it as a fundraiser for Isla, and we made a lot of money. So that was a great. And we had games and things outside, as well as the spooky house and food and things like that. So we'll do it again this year. We'll do it for three nights, and we'll again open it to the public and raise money for Isla and its productions and things like that. Halloween
so
weekend.
So that's going to make Halloween is, I mean, the only place for Halloween is going to be in Binnen Eich.
The only place in the valley to really experience it is going to be, in Binnen Eich. And the Spaniards are more and more embracing it. You see more of the costumes, of course, going up all over the place, and... yeah, so it's a...
But, you know, you have to tell us the story. I mean, I've been to many of these occasions, so I know what to expect. But tell us what you expect, because you don't just create a spooky house. The costumes, the makeup, the acting that you're doing just to take those kids and terrify them. Just tell us more.
Well, I did mention that I was an actor, and I did mention that I was a scenic designer and could build and paint. So of course, you know, that's... yeah, we go all out. We, Tommy and myself, they have hosted it most of the time, and once up at my mother-in-law's place. And we, last year, we went into his entrada, his entranceway, which is probably an 8x5 space, took all the furniture out, all the pictures off the wall, carpets and everything, and we put a platform in, double layer, everything from mazes to, you know, a house facade that you walk into to walk into the house, and hay bales out in front, and lights and strobes and smoke and electrics and twinkle lights, and everybody wound their way through different vignettes of creepiness and things like that. So each year we kind of think of where we're going to go, what we're going to do, and who's going to be in it, and what are you going to be, what are you going to do, and that just evolves. Last year, me and Tommy were these two hillbilly guys from Atlanta, and we talk like this, and people came in and visited us. What you doing here, boy? Eh? You better get out of here. A little kind of creepy, a little kind of, you know, whatever, Deliverance-esque. And then, so we just figure out what we're going to do, where we're going to go, and then who's going to be in those spooky places, and it grows and develops like that. So we have that, and we have A Christmas Carol, and then I'll begin the acting classes again, and... probably do something in the spring. We normally do something in the spring. We did last February, a collection of one-act original plays that we did at a bar, Antiquary by Plaza Mayor. We ran that for three weekends and then brought it back in March because of popular demand.
Now that was very, very interesting there, because you were deliberately keeping it to a limited number, weren't you? And yeah. The audience were part of your set.
We could only have about 30 places for people to sit, and it was downstairs in the cafe, a little chill out kind of place. We brought in seating and kind of arranged things, but they were cafe plays. They were plays that took place at a table in a bar in that environment, so they worked for that. Very intimate and great as an actor to work in that way, to act as you need to work on film, because you have to be subtle, you can't fake anything. Everything has to be 100% real, because you're sitting a meter and a half away from people. It's as if people, and from the audience's perspective, quite an extraordinary thing to experience if you haven't been that close. I mean, normally you're, you know, 15 feet away from the stage, and you have this kind of light curtain in front of you, so there is the communion that you receive from a live performance between actor and audience member, but in this situation, you're literally sitting at the table next to them, eavesdropping on their conversation, anything from adultery to death to, you know, intimate conversations about life. And they were these beautiful little plays, and it was a great experience to do. So we'll do something again in the spring, in that time slot, and we see what that ends up being and where.
So, you know, your life is a moving feast, and you don't know from one month to the next who you're going to be involved with, what you're going to do. I mean, this gives you some form to your year, but anything goes, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a freelance person always kind of looks to the next thing and the next opportunity, and when you're doing what I do, you have to create it yourself and make it happen. I've spoken with the tennis club in Palma, and they've always been extremely supportive. With the projects and the things that I've done. They're also the owners of Portichol and Esplendido, and, you know, we talked about an outdoor thing. You know, why in the world is there no outdoor theater on this island in this kind of climate with these kinds of people who come? When you have in Cornwall, when it's pissing down rain, or every other place in the world, Sweden, Gotland has, you know, summer theater, but there's no international English-speaking or international theater outside here on this island, at least to my knowledge, to the level that I would like to take it to. So I've mentioned to her, and she's been very interested and supportive of that, of, you know, perhaps putting up a stage on the tennis court and doing something. I don't know if it's the big summer musical or a Shakespeare play or whatever. And because we have the relationship with her, depending on the timing and their calendar, it's something that could happen, you know, as well. So there are always these possibilities and opportunities and things, and, you know, some play I'd love to do with the kids. I'd love to do Biloxi Blues. I don't know how many people know that from Europe, but it's a great play that I think won the Tony in 85, and Matthew Broderick played it. It's a trilogy play, and it's about this young Eugene Jerome going off to war, going off to Biloxi, Mississippi for basic training in World War II. So it's a very worldly thing in its context about the war and of course, you know what was happening that time geopolitically, but also talks about growing up, boyhood to manhood, and all of that within the military that you go through, and him trying to meet the perfect girl, wanting to have that first kiss before he goes away, and also, you know, topics like homosexuality and things like that, and that it was punishable by law if you were gay in the military, or, you know, and certainly looked upon differently in regular life. So all of these great themes within this body of work that Neil Simon wrote is a great play for eight young actors and one Sergeant Toomey, who of course will be me, because Christopher Walken played him in the film, and yeah, so that's got to be me. But the rest I can pull from my lovely kids who would be perfect for it, from my acting classes. So, you know, to find those pieces of published works or something that we develop and create on our own, to give them those possibilities and opportunities, and to really put it on, to do it full out with costumes and props and high production value, and give them the experiences that I got when I was young, is what I would like to achieve.
What I hope does not happen is that someone is listening to this thinking, we want this man in America, or we want him in the UK, or we want him somewhere else, because we need you here. We're grateful that you are here doing this with our kids, and we are very grateful that you are here.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I always thought, you know, it's been such a great place to live for the kids and for ourselves to grow and develop our passions, my wife with yoga and myself now with the theatrical things. As long as I can find these outlets for myself and for others, you know, to feed my passions and to keep me artistically full, when I can find that and when I can do that, I'm truly happy. And so wherever I am and wherever I end up and wherever I am with my family, if I can complete that circle, you know, then I feel good.
Well, I think on that note, we can finish, because we just really hope that you have completed your circle right here. And thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Shirley. Thanks so much.
Ship ahoy!